Welcome to Merry Man Herbs, It's a Better Life Show. Listen in every first and third Sunday on 1340 Radio AM for the latest in holistic, natural, and alternative health information. And now, here's Mike King. This information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You still should consult a qualified healthcare practitioner. There's a lot of new information coming out in the news today about your health. One of the things that kind of hit me that I've been talking about, and I think it's very important, is there's a new study in the Journal of American College of Cardiology that says people who are taking aspirin that are low risk to prevent a first-time heart attack should not do so. And this just came out on Monday, January 12th. And it's very exciting news. And, of course, earlier on, back in May of last year, the FDA sent out a special notice that, now I'm going to read this. This is a quote from the FDA. Consumers and patients who do not suffer from cardiovascular disease sometimes consider taking aspirin to reduce the possibility of having a heart attack or stroke. Reducing the possibility of having a first heart attack or stroke is called primary prevention. The FDA has reviewed the available data and does not believe the evidence supports the general use of aspirin for primary prevention of heart attack or stroke. In fact, there are serious risks associated with the use of aspirin, including risk of bleeding in the stomach and brain in situations where the benefit of aspirin for primary prevention has not been established. And this all actually came about, if you do the research on it, Bayer was pushing to try to get this as a common thing to be done by the general public, and the FDA looked at it and said, no, it's probably not a good idea. And I know so many people who take that baby aspirin every day. So if you have not had a first-time heart attack or stroke, the FDA is now saying not to do that. Now, again, just recently, this week, a new study came out. 68,000 patients were tested. I love big studies like this. And they basically said that, again, each person's risk of developing heart disease was calculated by researchers from Bayer College of Medicine. And again, it basically says that you really should not be taking that aspirin. And again, if you look at the science, this is kind of what I spiel off for people, but aspirin is bad for your eyes, it's bad for your hearing, it's of course bad for your stomach, it's bad for your liver, it's bad for your kidneys. There are some studies out there showing that it can increase your incidence of pancreatic and possibly even breast cancer. So, you know, there are some studies showing that it helps reduce cancer, but there's studies showing that it helps increase cancer. So it's kind of one of these things that I'd prefer to stay away from. So the aspirin is really maybe not the way to go unless, you know, of course, it's recommended by your doctor and you've maybe had a heart attack or stroke. But there are a lot of other alternatives, and that's where we come in is, you know, okay, well, I can't take that aspirin. I want to keep, you know, my blood from clotting, but maybe I don't want to get on a heavy-duty drug. What do I do? Well, there's vitamin E. There's, of course, garlic, fish oil. I'm sure your doctors talk to you about fish oil. And then some more exotic things like nattokinase, ginkgo biloba, coleus forscoli. So there's a lot of different things that you can do to help keep your blood from possibly not clotting and to do it safely. So that's in the news. The other thing that came out that I was really excited about, a brand new study, and it's a major study. It's a recent review of 343 studies. Earlier on, we were hearing that the organic foods maybe aren't as healthy than conventionally grown foods. Now, this new study finds that organic foods are healthier than conventionally grown foods. And there's also possibly higher levels of cadmium, which is a toxic heavy metal, because of the basically processing and so forth that goes on and procedures that they use in conventionally grown foods. And again, the free radicals, the nutrients are always higher in organic. So we now have scientific evidence, factually based, that eating organic foods is healthier than conventionally grown foods. And of course, a lot of the supplements that you get into and that you take, you really want to make sure that they're organic. And it's very, very important. Now, for some little fun tips, this is, I like to do this every show, and I think you'd really be interested in this. These are kind of fun little tips. If you have trouble sleeping, it could be because your brain is more active and you tend to think more at night than during the day. And what do you do about that? Well, there's a lot of supplements, a lot of different things. I know one of the big things that I've always been told by some of my friends that are doctors and involved in sleep that you really shouldn't watch the news right or anything stimulating right before you try to go to sleep. So that maybe will help slow your brain down a little bit. People in the U.S. spend more than $50 billion every year on diet plans, diet books, diet pills, and special meals. And I think we kind of go crazy with that. I got a lot of friends that'll buy exercise equipment, spend a lot of money on that, and then it just sits there and doesn't get used. So it's one of these things of there's a lot of money being spent. Of course, you can always come out to Merryman. We've got some really phenomenal things to help you get started on your weight loss that are safe and effective, and we'd love to talk to you about that. The Presbyterian minister, Sylvester Graham, was the inventor of the Graham cracker, and he believed that eating meat made people sexually promiscuous. So I don't know about that, but I think it's kind of a fun fact. And, of course, Americans eat more than 22 pounds of tomatoes every year, half of which is in the form of tomato sauce and ketchup. So we love our tomatoes. So, again, in the news, aspirin, to kind of review real quickly. I know a lot of times this comes really fast for people, but aspirin, that baby aspirin a day, is not recommended by the FDA. There's a major study out now saying that it's really not the thing to do. So basically now we know that we should not be taking that baby aspirin every day unless you've had problems, if you had that first stroke or heart attack. And of course, if your doctor recommends it, then you know you do what your doctor tells you. Along that note, right now we're in the season of colds and flu, and everybody's always asking me, you know, what do we do? What do I do for my cold? How do I prevent colds? What's the best thing to do? One of the first things that I really love that I kind of rest my hat on, of course, is getting plenty of sleep and rest and proper diet. You know, all of those things are extremely important, but you can, as supplement-wise, oregano is one of the things I really love, the wild Mediterranean oregano. And I'll be bringing Cass Ingram in one of these days. He's authored more than about 30 books. He's the leading authority on oregano. But wild Mediterranean oregano, I personally take that every day. Vitamin C, of course, is very, very good. Then some of the minerals, selenium and zinc, are also good. There are some more exotic things like the fermented yeast metabolites branded under the Epicor name that can be taken. Systemic enzymes, because they like to break down viruses. There's elderberry, echinacea, on and on. We have formulas and all kinds of stuff, but all kinds of good supplements and combinations. So you can do a lot to prevent. You can do a lot to reduce the time of your cold or flu. And it's very safe, simple, and you get nothing but positive benefits when you supplement. Now, the thing that I'm really excited about today, and I've brought my good friend in, Mike Schimmett. Mike Schimmett, are you on the line here?
I am. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike. You're back again. And I'm getting ready to talk about vitamin D. And vitamin D is like my poster child of vitamins now. I really love vitamin D. I can't say enough good things about it. And one of the neatest things that I have just recently studied is there's a couple major good clinical studies on vitamin D. And it reduced the incidence of flu by about 50%. There was a study in Japan and a couple other studies. But it significantly reduces your incidence of getting flu and colds and so forth. And then, you know, you compare that to the flu vaccine. And as we know, it's basically ineffective this year. And, you know, there's a lot of other problems that come along with taking the flu. There's even some studies that show that if you take that flu vaccine, it actually helps to degrade your immune system. Major studies. And I'll probably talk about more. And I have in the past. I will in the future talk more about some of those studies. But today we're going to really concentrate on vitamin D. I love vitamin D, and brought you in, Mike, to talk a little bit about how it's made and some of the good things about it. But before I start quizzing you, I do want to let people know that one of the big questions I always get hit with is, how much vitamin D should I take? How much should I supplement with? You know, do I take 1,000 IUs or 5,000 IUs, or what do I do? The science shows, the major studies, and you can get a lot of great information from vitamindcouncil.org. That's vitamindcouncil, all one word, .org. You can go online, and they basically recommend to take your body weight, multiply it by 30, and then convert it to IUs. So, you know, if you weigh 100 pounds, basically you'd need to take about 3,000 IUs a day. Most of my customers, most people I know, take about 5,000 IUs. And again, you're really not going to get in trouble unless you get into extremely high doses of the vitamin D. And I'm not a real big proponent of taking mega doses of even the B12 or vitamin D or anything like that. And I like to basically, and I think we've talked about this before, give you the analogy, you know, are you a camel? You know, do you drink all of your water for the month at one time? Do you eat all your food at one time for the week? You know, you don't do that. Your body's like an engine. It likes to get a little bit at a time and be slowly fed. So if you take a large amount of a vitamin or basically, you know, any nutritional supplement like that, it could do more harm than good. So I'm not a big proponent of going in and getting massive amounts of these products. In fact, if you look back in the history of vitamin D, when it first came out, it was a super cure-all, and you had some conventional medical doctors giving, I think, upwards of 300,000 IUs a day to individuals. And of course, a few people died. And then again, then they're like, well, vitamin D is dangerous. And of course it's not. But when you get crazy and give super high dosages, then you run into trouble. What I try to tell everybody, and I think is extremely important, is to always ask your doctor for a vitamin D test and find out where your vitamin D is. The Vitamin D Council suggests that you need to keep your vitamin D between 60 nanograms per milliliter to 100 nanograms per milliliter. About 50 nanograms is an accepted measurement. It's the minimum acceptable level. So talk to your doctor about it, and you don't have to get all fancy and say, well, I need a 25-hydroxy vitamin D test or anything like that. Just ask for a vitamin D test, stay on top of it, and I think you'll be much better off. So, Mike, before we get into 25 reasons to supplement with vitamin D, let's talk a little bit about how vitamin D is made, the different forms of vitamin D, and of course, you work for a wonderful nutraceutical company called Nature's Plus, and you make some really good quality vitamin Ds. I know kind of the general over-the-counter, everyday vitamin D is made from lanolin, from the sheep's wool, and of course, scientifically, we know that's how vitamin D starts. It starts in the sebaceous or oil skin, the oil on your skin. When the sun hits that, then you start this whole mechanism of producing these vitamin D, which is actually a steroid hormone that addresses it affects every cell in your body. And it's extremely bioactive. It's also known as calcitriol. And let's talk a little bit about, Mike, your company makes a lot of different vitamin Ds or some new fermentation processes. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely, Mike. Thanks again for having me. And
You're welcome.
Thank you. And regarding vitamin D, several different forms, as you mentioned, but ultimately vitamin D is fat soluble, and that's one of the most important things to remember and think about. And that sheep's wool that you mentioned, you know, I take it a step further and I talk about sheep's wool sweat.
Okay.
No sheep die in the process, of course, or harmed in any way.
Well, that's good to know.
But, you know, and that was the very first form of D3, which, as you know, is the most bioavailable form of D.
Right, right.
Prior to that, there were plant-based sources of vitamin D. D2, in fact, is the form, ergocholecalciferol. And while vitamin D is D2 is good, it has to be broken down a few extra times before the body can actually utilize it.
Right. So you would probably want to take a little bit more of that, or what's the deal with the supplementation on that, the D2?
Well, the big issue that I see for most people, you know, if you are a vegetarian or a vegan,
right,
so from the old forms of D3, if you will, or the more common generic forms coming from sheep's wool sweat, basically most stricter vegans, vegetarians wouldn't be interested in that source. So D2 was their primary source as far as supplementation and foods as well.
Right. Well, we don't really even sell D2 anymore because I know there's some new fermentation processes that are vegan and can give you the D3.
Correct. And you mentioned those processes. One of the early forms that Nature's Plus introduced about 2 years ago in our Source of Life garden line, garden products, actually coming from mushroom.
Really?
Which is very interesting to a lot of people, yes, because, of course, mushroom is a plant, and plants primarily produce D2 naturally.
Right,
however,
right.
However, we learned with our supplier that we could kind of control the nutrients, water and nutrients that the mushrooms are taking in. And in that process, and through a little bit of stressing them, again, no mushrooms are harmed in the process.
we can't hurt the mushrooms.
Exactly. But we can encourage them to produce a little bit more D3 than they typically did. They always made trace amounts, but it was a very small amount. So we encourage that to be a larger volume of the overall production, and then we're able to extract that D3 utilize that in supplements.
So you feed them the right stuff, just like us humans. When we eat the right stuff, then we're healthier. So you feed the mushrooms the right basically ingredients so they can produce more vitamin D, so that makes your processing cheaper and better and so forth, and then you can get the vitamin D from the mushrooms.
Exactly. It's more of a giving them those nutrients, but sort of giving them at the right time.
Ah, okay.
In the right amount. So there's some playing around with that there, because it does put them in a little bit of stress.
Right.
You know, maybe makes them a little bit more hungry, a little bit, you know, too full of nutrients, and then those stresses actually help create more D3.
Interesting, because I know out in just general the herbology and with the essential and fragrant oils, when plants are stressed, a lot of times they'll produce more oils or more antioxidant compounds and so forth. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Precisely. And now, just as of in the last, maybe year and a half to two, a great emerging source, a great clean source as well, is lichen.
Oh, okay. Isn't that kind of part plant, part algae or something like that?
Part plant, lichens? Part moss.
Moss.
Part algae. And so, and lichen actually is a little bit easier to get the D3 from than the stressing of those mushrooms, which is a pretty lengthy process and constantly changing and manipulating, you know.
Okay, so now lichen's the green kind of mossy stuff that grows on rocks.
Correct.
Okay. So now you're getting the vitamin D3 from that. What's involved in that processing?
Well, again, too, it's this goes back, you know, to the original sourcing, but you have to work out with the suppliers, and you have to have a good clean source of supply.
Of course,
on these particular plantations, if you will, you want to make sure that you can, you know, get all the certifications of organics. And you did mention one thing about organic foods and higher nutrient counts. And
yes.
If I could, I'd like to take a quick minute on that.
Oh, sure.
When you think about a plant, any kind of fruit or vegetable that is given the easy life, if you will, herbicides, pesticides, that plant never really matures to its fullest potential because it's always kind of, again, given the easy life, things were taken care of for them. And I won't make any analogy to children, but an organic food or nutrient, on the other hand, plant had to develop its own defenses against, you know, the pests and the problems, you know, that it incurs during its lifetime. As a result, those organic foods end up having more phytonutrients, and those phytonutrients are obviously nutrients, but they're also flavors as well.
Okay.
So that's why often organic foods not only taste better, but have those higher nutrient levels as well.
Exactly. Well, it's kind of like us as humans. If we lay around all day and don't do anything and eat a lot of fast food and don't eat right, we end up being kind of sick people. We really have a lot of problems. We have headaches. Our bodies, you know, say this isn't the way to be. And so it's the same with the plant world. If they're actually able to grow up in a natural environment rather than getting, and I love your analogy of the easy life, then they're going to be able to benefit us better. I always when people talk about, the organic free range, like with the beef and the chicken and so forth, and again, I've got a lot of good friends that are vegan and they're like, don't even talk about this. But the thing is, do you want to eat a chicken that's been cooped up all day and it's had its beak, you know, trimmed off and it's in a cage and it's probably depressed and very unhappy, it's had a horrible life? Do you want to eat that meat? Or do you want to eat the meat from a chicken that's been out running around in the sunshine and is happy and is with its friends and basically had a good life and is eating the right type of food? I mean, which you know, where do you want to get your food from? The highly processed or maybe the one that's the free range? And I will tell you, when you eat organic foods, the vegetables, the meats, the ones that are really coming from maybe a less stressed or a higher stressed environment, but a less toxic environment, the more natural environment, you don't really have to eat as much. It's more satiating. It gives you better satisfaction, fills you up more. The food tastes, I think it tastes better. I can actually sometimes taste chemicals. I know on strawberries and things like that, the difference between organic and non-organic, you can sometimes taste the chemicals. I swear I can. And I know a lot of customers too. So Mike, you've made some really good points there. Now, there's also some companies out there, and I'm sure you're familiar with it too, they take a lot of different vegetables or vegetable matter and they ferment that and they kind of extract the vitamin D out of that product. Do you do something like that too, or do you know anything about that?
Well, there's several different fermentation processes you can use. One is a brown rice fermentation. So okay. You can actually have nutrients in the brown rice and you ferment them, and that can also enhance, you know, the nutrient content, create some enzymes as well that are beneficial. And there's also fermentation through a brewer's yeast as well.
Oh, okay. And then you're going to probably be getting the 1,2,3 beta glucans and a lot of other things. The yeast, when you get into yeast fermentation, there's a lot of really active compounds that are very healthy and very beneficial. And that's, you know, that's would be another subject for another show. There's a lot of things in yeast, I know. And then, you know, you can add selenium and things like that in there too. So, again, with this vitamin D, when you make these vitamin Ds, you've chosen basically your best source, again, if I'm getting this correctly, is from the lichen?
Well, it turns out to be probably a very reliable source, a very readily available source in terms of that nutrient, that particular, you know, that moth in this case. Again,
right.
Stressing the mushrooms, again, when we introduced that about 2 years ago, it was actually the first truly vegan D3, you know, coming from plant source that there were. The common sources previous to that were, again, the sheep's wool sweat. So
right.
The lichen is proving to be more readily available, a good solid stream, a reliable stream, you know, because when you are in the business of producing supplements, you want a quality pool of nutrients of source to be able to get those nutrients from. The last thing you want to do is introduce a product, have it on the market, and then not be able to follow that up with inventory on the shelf.
You know that. I do not like getting yelled at. You don't have any my favorite vitamin D. You know, I don't, you know, when we run out of something, it's not a good thing. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to explain to a customer, hey, the manufacturer, there's such a huge demand on this, and it's a pure product, and it's not easy to make. And there's a limited supply. They are, you know, trying to increase the manufacturing. So that's a really good point there, Mike. I think, you know, it's very important for people to know sometimes some of this new natural stuff, it's harder to make. It's a little bit more expensive. I had one of my friends in the other day. He says, Mike, give me the best vitamin D that you have. And he says, I don't care about, you know, price or anything like that. And of course, when we're talking vitamin D, you're talking $10, maybe $20 for a month's supply. It's not expensive. So, you know, again, it's a wonderful investment, and, you know, I think it's one of those things that I'm going to get into the 25 reasons to supplement with vitamin D. This came from one of my doctor friends. Actually, it's on the Vitamin D Council. You can look it up there, and it's unbelievable what vitamin D is good for, and I'm going to go through this, and Mike, feel free to, if you want to make a comment or add anything, we can definitely do that, but one of the biggest reasons to supplement with vitamin D, as we already talked about, is, you know, for your immune system. But I think everybody knows vitamin D is good for your bones. It's also very good for your muscle strength, muscle power, and force development. That's the third thing. It also helps with a lean body mass. So, you know, a lot of people that are concerned about their weight, vitamin D helps with that. It's phenomenal for the treatment of psoriasis and skin disorders. And as I just said, there's the new study that just came out about vitamin D being very, very good for the winter itch in Mongolia. They did a study on some school children, and it's extremely beneficial for the dermatitis that they have in the wintertime, that what we call the winter itch. I think it's called atopic dermatitis, and there's a great study, and so it's really good for that. It really kind of helped the itching and the dry skin and so forth, and that type of eczema. again, vitamin D is very, very good. Number six, good for blood sugar regulation and insulin resistance. I have had a number of customers that have gotten great benefit with their diabetes by bringing up their vitamin D levels. In fact, some of them have reduced their insulin. In fact, some of them even have gotten off of it. So it's something you really want to talk to your doctor about. Great for preventing multiple sclerosis, cancer prevention. We can go on for hours on that one. Asthma treatment, again, it's great for your lungs. Male reproductive health, cardiovascular health, brain health, fetal brain development. It's very important for, you know, a mother that's pregnant to be taking the proper prenatals, and vitamin D is one of those that's in there. Female reproductive and maternal health. Treatment of depression and brain disorders. Vitamin D does uplift your mood. If you do get a higher dose of that, it will make you feel happy, happy. Again, immune function, kidney health. Vitamin D is phenomenal for your kidneys. We're getting down now to number 18, treatment of hypertension and metabolic diseases, hypertension, high blood pressure, so it's good for that. Prevention of obesity, again, that kind of gets back to that lean muscle, body mass, and so forth. Prevention of Parkinson's disease, it's very beneficial. People that develop Parkinson's, of course, have a low level. They found a low level of vitamin D. Prevention of rickets and other bone disease disorders, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, prevention and treatment, so it's very, very good for your lungs. Treatment of autoimmune conditions, treatment of childhood anemia, and of course, very, very good for infections. So again, vitamin D is the poster child of vitamins. Mike, thank you so much for all the information. Is there anything you want to add about vitamin D that you know about that we haven't mentioned?
Well, just one thing. You know, it's actually, again, the test is very important to have your D levels tested and monitored. Yes. If you are going to take some higher levels, just to be sure, because, again, it is fat-soluble. And what do we mean by that? You know, we throw some of these terms around sometimes. Fat-soluble, two things. Number one, it's best absorbed when taken in fats or with fats. So several different forms to take it supplementally, whether it be a dry capsule. In that case, you're looking at, you know, no oil, so you definitely want to eat it with a meal or take it with a meal where you are consuming some healthy fats,
right,
whether it be a nice olive oil on your salad, etc.
Oh, good idea. Right.
And then with regard to age and absorption issues, it's known by many studies that it's a little bit even more critical for older people to take a little bit higher level of vitamin D.
Right, because they have a little more malabsorption. Right, right.
Exactly.
Well,
you know, the digestive system slows down as folks age. So it's very important because the fats are very difficult to break down.
Well, that's great information, Mike. And I know if you take way too much vitamin D, it can kind of mess up your calcium levels. So again, work with your doctor. Keep an eye on that. But again, it's very, very hard to really take too much of that vitamin. Again, I appreciate all the information you've given us today. And hopefully everybody will enjoy all this new information. And again, I just love vitamin D. So thank you very much, Mike. And I hope everybody enjoyed listening in today with the Merryman Herbs. It's a Better Life Show. This information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You still should consult a qualified healthcare practitioner.